growth is not linear. It's what we talked about last week. We can see that take place in the physical perspective. We see that take place in performance. We used an illustration last week about professional baseball players who guys had left to be washed up, who had a higher OPS over the second half of the season than Hank Aaron did over his career. It wasn't linear. He was left for dead. A lot of times, we feel like our growth should always be linear. We feel like that the one thing should lead to the next thing, should lead to the next thing. And ultimately, if we are being honest and gracious with ourselves, if we're being honest before the Lord and we're approaching His throne of grace, as it tells us in Hebrews, then there will be an upward trajectory, okay? There will be growth that takes place, but the performance itself, okay, from our individual perspective, can feel a lot more like a roller coaster, right? How it feels in my life personally, okay, but what, when we continue to be honest with God and when we continue to move forward, we see an upward trajectory. However, okay, when we are judging performance from the outside, okay, that's where we can get into some trouble, okay? And so I want to show that we want to be gracious with ourselves, and we want to be gracious with our disciples as we recognize that the growth process looks differently. It looks differently depending on who you are. It looks differently depending on what your background is. It looks differently depending on what you're going through. Let me point out another example, and Peter himself is going to be the main example that we're talking about this morning. But think about what you know about the first century churches. Isn't it true that the first century churches, who were primarily Jewish, were much more likely to have elders? Okay. Yes. Very much true. Why? Well, their background set them up so that they had more men who would be qualified to be able to step into the office of elder. Hey, the Gentile people, they're a bunch of heathens, right? What? Husband of one wife? Believing children? Are you nuts? You know, able to teach? That's crazy talk, okay? A lot of their backgrounds, okay, had kind of disqualified them from being able to take that next step forward. Hey, that's pretty intuitive for us to recognize about those churches. And you see too, okay, that those churches either benefited or suffered from that. Now, that didn't make those Gentile Christians any less Christians. Okay? Didn't make them any less spiritual even. Okay? What it made them is at where they were at. Okay? And their only responsibility was to move forward. So disciple growth isn't linear. Okay. And the examination of Peter in particular is important because we know that Peter's discipler was a pretty good discipler. Right? Like the best. Right? So he knew what he was doing. Right? Jesus knew what he was doing when he was working with Peter and growing and developing Peter. Now, one of the things that I want us to notice let's go ahead and go to Matthew 17. So last week we talked about Jesus calling Peter in Matthew chapter 4. And then in Matthew 16, it's really clear and really pretty. It wraps it up. What we're talking about is that Peter confesses, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God, right? And he nails it. And Jesus is like, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven, hey, you here, I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Way to go. Okay. Then in verse 21, okay, Jesus starts to tell his disciples about his trek to Jerusalem and how he's going to have to suffer many things and be killed and then raise up on the third day. And Peter's saying, God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you. And Jesus, right after giving him the keys to the kingdom of heaven, it says, get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, Satan. There we got power again. So, Jesus isn't worried about hurting Peter's feelings, okay? But then in chapter 17, Jesus has taken Peter with him and to his transfiguration, okay? And so, Peter, James, and John are there for Jesus' transfiguration, and he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his garments became as white as light, and behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with him, and Peter answered and said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make you three tabernacles here, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice out of the cloud saying, this is my beloved Son with whom I am well. Please listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were much afraid. And Jesus came to them and arose and touched them and said, arise, do not be afraid. Lifting up their eyes, they saw no one except himself alone. Notice that Peter's spirit was not at all dampened. So I think that that's important for us to realize is that Jesus, though being more than happy, okay, to correct Peter where Peter needed corrected, that did not result in Peter's losing heart. Peter's still being Peter, right? Hey, Lord, guess what? I'm going to make you some tabernacles here. Okay, I'm going to get to building, and I know you got some carpentry experience, but you got some better things to do, Lord. So I'm going to get after that thing, okay? Notice he's not at all afraid of what Jesus, he's not timid. He hasn't become afraid. He is still looking to be of service. See, that's one of the things that can happen when we're judging based upon, hopefully I lose my notes here. When we're judging based upon strict performance, okay, is that people know when that performance is being judged. People know when that performance is being judged. So when people recognize when that performance is being judged, you know what people don't want to be? Judged. So you know what the response is? I am not going to do anything. Right? Because I can't be criticized for not doing anything. I'll just do what I'm told, okay? Keep to myself. I'm going to not do anything. I'm going to sit on my hands because I don't want to get judged here. Notice that Jesus' rebuke or correction of Peter did not result in a stifling of Peter's spirit. It resulted in Peter, okay, hey, there's some more information I need to get here. And then Peter right away is just being Peter. And Jesus is encouraging it. Jesus is putting him in that position to be able to see that. We see that again in Matthew 18. In Matthew chapter 18, in verse 21, then Peter, see, when they're talking, you can kind of tell, they plant things in Peter's head, and they know that Peter's going to be the one who's going to open his mouth, right? I mean, it's just, you can tell kind of that whole thing working out. And in verse 21, then Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? Again, you can kind of infer here a little bit. Peter was being gracious with his up to seven times. You can go back and see the history and forgiveness, and we're not going to get into all that this afternoon. But he thought he was being gregarious by giving up to seven times. Check it out, Jesus. I've been learning. Right? I've been around you, Jesus, and those guys, they might just want like three times or something, Jesus. Hey, we up to seven times, right? We are gracious faith people, right? Pretty good. Well, what's Jesus' response, right? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. But Peter is willing to ask the question. Peter is willing to ask the question. Peter wants Jesus to be proud of him. Okay? Peter wants Jesus to be proud of him. And you can see that Jesus does affirm him. Matthew chapter 14. Go back just a little bit. Again, Jesus is systematically working, developing, growing his disciples and understanding that this is something that they have to grow into, something that takes time. And Jesus was kind of on a tight schedule. I mean, think about it. Jesus knew exactly, okay, when it was that he was going to have to die. If you track Jesus' life through, okay, there are specific times that he did not go into Jerusalem because he knew that they would either try to make him king by force or they would put him to death before the time. He was on track. He knew how long he had. So he was on a strict time schedule. And yet, what's his response to those guys that he is depending on for the kingdom to move forward? He put a bunch of time pressure on them. What is wrong with you, Peter? Come on, man. How many years have we been going, right? How many years have we been trying to figure this thing out? How many years have you been with me and you're like, yeah, yep, no, we don't need you to build a tabernacle. Okay, no, that's not, no, not 70 times, no, not seven times, 70 times. Peter, oh, get behind me. That's not, okay? It's not Jesus' attitude. Jesus, again, he isn't sugarcoating anything, but Jesus, okay, is developing his disciples, specifically and namely Peter in this case, exactly the way that he needs it. Matthew 14 and verse 22. And immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. Well, he sent the multitudes away. And after he had sent the multitudes away, he went up by the mountain to him, by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already many strata away from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were frightened, saying, "It is a ghost," and they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. Now we're going to read the other verses here in just a second. But you can tell, okay, that Peter is using his own creativity and innovation. His personality is coming out and saying, hey, Lord, if it's you, I'm coming. I wouldn't have been that guy. Right? I am still thinking and observing about, we're seeing Jesus walking on the water. I'd been trying to figure out why exactly Jesus was walking on the water. And then I would be like, what was the last thing I ate? And, I'd be processing through a lot of those things. But my personality, individually, coming from the scripture, I know that my personality and Peter's personality are not at all similar. They just aren't. Okay? I thought growing up as a kid, Peter, he had the keys to the kingdom of heaven. He's preaching the first gospel sermon. I should be like Peter. Well, then I grew up. Right? No, I don't have to be like Peter. Be like Marshall and figure out what that matches. As of today, I think that's a little bit more like Barnabas, but that's another discussion for another day. So he says, Lord, let me come out to you. And Jesus says, come on out. Come on out. Come out to me. Verse 29, he said, come. And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, Lord, save me. And Jesus said, nope, you wanted this thing. You're going to drown. Come on. All right, that's not what I said. And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took a hold of him and said to him, O you of little faith, why did you doubt? See, he knew Peter too. Number one, he saved him, right? All right, come on, Peter. And he's like, come on, why'd you doubt? You're doing good. Why'd you doubt? And again, Marshall knowing Marshall, if Jesus would have said that to me, I'd be like, oh, I'd be kicking myself all over town for the next week. You know what I mean? I don't think Peter probably thought about that 5 minutes later, right? Like, yeah, probably should have kept walking. Like, yeah, whatever, guys, right? It's just, I could be wrong. Again, I'm telling you that's just kind of a thought that I've had. But Jesus knew what buttons to push with Peter because he loved and cared about Peter and did not feel like Peter's performance reflected upon him as a disciple maker. Was Jesus the perfect disciple maker? Yep. Okay. Did Peter's performance always reflect that Jesus was the perfect disciple maker? Not his performance, but his faith did. Faith eventually results in performance. So, Peter's not discouraged. Okay? Jesus can tell him hard truths, and Peter still wants to follow Jesus. Well, we all got to be confronted with some hard truths at some times. As those of us who are making disciples, okay, we got to pray for wisdom to the Lord, know how to deliver some of those hard truths. Know when to be patient and gracious and know that, hey, we got to give people some time to grow into some things. The way that it works out. I know that as a young Christian, when I had a lot more knowledge than I did wisdom, okay, man, when somebody would say something wrong, whew, correct that thing. I'm trying to get those things to balance out these days, right? Well, we don't want false doctrine to get going, but there's usually a way that you can correct some things without making it confrontational. Let's say it that way. It doesn't always have to be a fight, right? And so Jesus, okay, knows exactly what button to push with Peter. Jesus knows exactly what button to push with John. It kind of makes me think of when John's leaning up against him at the Last Supper there. And Jesus is kind of like, what is it to you if I decide that he should remain until I come? You worry about your own self, right? So, now, Peter's not discouraged. Peter's moving forward. Jesus is recognizing that Peter's performance doesn't reflect on what kind of a disciple maker he is. And Jesus, as he's coming down, I want us to fast forward to Jesus' crucifixion, and the events leading up to Jesus' crucifixion. Okay, we've got the Last Supper. Let's go ahead and go to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew 26. Something else that, well, let's go ahead and read 20 through 25. Now when evening had come, he was reclining at the table with the 12 disciples. And as they were eating, he said, truly I say to you that one of you will betray me. And being deeply grieved, each one began to say to him, surely not I, Lord. And he who answered and said, he who dipped his hand with me in the bowl is the one who will betray me. The Son of Man is to go just as it is written of him, but woe to the man whom the Son of Man has betrayed. It would have been good for that man had he not been born. And Judas, who was betraying him, answered and said, surely it is not I, Rabbi. He said to him, you have said it yourself. Okay, I want to stop there just for a second. I want us to recognize that Jesus invited his disciples around the table. Okay, and as he invited his disciples around the table, he did not exclude Judas, knowing exactly what Judas is about to do. Knowing exactly what Peter is about to do. See, Peter and Judas both had choices, didn't they? And in their betrayal of Jesus, were they all that dissimilar? But he invites them both to the table. Okay? And lets them make their choices. So he invites them around the table to share in this intimate meal with him and the people who he has spent his past 3.5 years at least pouring his life around, knowing what he has facing him, and he invites his betrayer, or maybe we could say it, betrayers, to the table. Come on. See, Jesus loves so much that it wasn't about Jesus personally, was it? I mean, how do you feel? Well, I think that depends on what your motivation really is, doesn't it? How you might feel. See, if our motivation is to give glory to God, there's going to be a recognition that they have choices to make. And I simply need to do what is in front of me to do. And for God to get the glory. It's not you that they've rejected, right? Even Jesus is God in the flesh, recognized that they rejected the prophets. They're going to reject me too, right? So he invites them to the table. He institutes the Lord's Supper. Verse 26. While they were eating, Jesus took some bread, and after a blessing, he broke it and said to his disciples, and gave it to his disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he said, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for forgiveness of sins. But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. After singing a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, you will all fall away because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. But Peter answered and said to them, even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away.
Jesus said to them, "Truly I say to you, that this very night before a cock crows, you shall deny me three times." And Jesus said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same thing too. After all this, Peter's still willing to speak up, right? And that's exactly the kind of guy that God needed. That's exactly the kind of guy that's going to open the door to the kingdom of heaven. Jesus didn't stifle that. Okay. "Hey, I will not fall away." Jesus said, "You know what? You're going to deny me three times before that cock crows." Sure enough, right? Sure enough, he denied him three times. Excuse me. And he denies him three times. And then, he tells him he's going to deny him three times. And then Jesus takes them to Gethsemane and says to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And this guy who's going to deny him, he's certainly going to exclude from his inner circle now, right? Well, wait, that's not what 37 said. "And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me.' And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, 'My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as thou wilt.' And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter," who's he address? "So you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour. Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Over and over, Jesus is giving opportunity. Jesus gave opportunity to Judas. Jesus gave opportunity to Peter. Okay? Now, the reason why it's so powerful with Peter is because we know the end of the story. Right? I'm not ruining it for anybody. Okay? He's the one who wrote 1st and 2nd Peter. He's the great elder. He's the great apostle. But didn't Jesus give Judas similar opportunities? Judas just squandered them. Right? And so he takes Peter with him, and Peter, he falls asleep. Okay? But he is preparing Peter. He's developing Peter. He's growing Peter. In Matthew 26, verses 51 through 54, "And behold, one of those who were with Jesus reached out and drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear." Okay. Verse 52, "Then Jesus said, 'Put your sword back into its place, for all who take up the sword shall perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father and that he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? How then will the scriptures be fulfilled that it must happen this way?" John chapter 18 and verse 10 tells us that the guy took out his sword as Peter. Did Peter have some zeal? Could the Lord use that zeal? I mean, wasn't it fundamentally, as a leader, okay, one of the things he's recognizing about Peter is that Peter is willing to take up arms. He is willing to fight for, he has a belief in this thing. Whatever it takes, let's go. Let's roll. Right? They didn't appreciate that. His perspective just needed expanded. We can identify with that, can't we? I mean, he had some zeal to do the right thing and then realized that we were maybe being exactly counterproductive. Oops. Right? Oops. Well, Jesus fixes it, right? Says, "Hey, put your sword away. We're kind of going over something a little bit more important here, Pete. So just I'll give you some more instructions later, all right, buddy? So, then in verse 69 through 75, what do we have? So this guy who's ready to take up arms, even if I have to die with you, Lord, if I have to die with you, I'll die with you. I am not going to deny you. Except I did. 3 times. Right? But what do we see about Peter here too? Is he's getting up time after time. Hey. He gets knocked down. Right? He gets up again. He gets up. John chapter 20. I'm going to have Chumbawamba going through my head all day now. I was really hoping at least one person in the audience would know what I was talking about. John chapter 20. If you don't, it's probably better. John chapter 20, verse 1. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark and saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. So she ran and came to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved, and said to him, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Peter therefore went forth, and the other disciples, and they were going to the tomb. And the two were running together, and the other disciple ran ahead faster than Peter, and they came to the tomb first. And stooping and looking in, he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Simon Peter therefore also came following him and entered the tomb, and he beheld linen wrappings lying there, and the face cloth which had been on his head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. So the other disciples who had first come to the tomb entered then also, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. So the disciples went away again to their own homes. Peter's with the rest of the apostles here. They go back, they discover trouble at the tomb, they discover that there is trouble at the tomb, and who do they go to? Who do they go to? Is there any doubt that Peter cares? Is there any doubt that Peter wants what's best for Jesus and the other apostles? Okay. Now, it takes Peter some time to be able to translate that desire, that care, into being able to be helpful. But we don't always let our kids help because they're being helpful, do we? I mean, I got some nephews, right? Oh, Uncle Marshall, can I help you with that? Yeah. You can't. It would be a whole lot easier for me to just do it by myself, right? A whole lot easier for me to do it by myself. But it's important for them to be helpful because they need to learn how to turn their ability into capability. That's what Jesus is teaching Peter, is turning his ability into capability. See, we're going to see next week, we're going to see more of Peter's capability, but it's kind of interesting that there's some things that he has to overcome even when he's performing. There's some things that he has to overcome that as a good, strong, mature Christian, hey, he had some obstacles to get over, to take that next step. Each one of us needs to be concerned about where I'm at today and how I can turn that ability that Jesus has given me into capability. How I can turn that imputed righteousness into practicing righteousness. But recognizing that that's only going to happen through God's grace, and if I put in the work, He'll put in the timing.
He'll figure it out. He's got a big plan. I just wanted to do my part to be 100% a part of that plan. I think that's what we all want, and we can challenge ourselves with that this week. So, Jeremy?